Can I just check with the PC secretary whether we have a quorum?
Hi, good morning, Chair. Good morning, members. Chair, we do, correct. Shall I proceed with the roll call, Chair?
Please.
Ms. Yaku?
Morning, Chair. Morning, everyone.
Morning.
Mr. Burns Namashe?
Molo Slalo Namalungu Yiko.
Molo, Comrade Honorable Burns.
Mr. Mbuyani Chke.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, colleagues and members. I'm present. Thank you.
Morning.
Mr. Malamatia Chair.
Morning, Chair. Morning, colleagues. I'm present.
Good morning.
Ms. Mwatse, Chair.
Good morning, Chairperson, and good morning, members. I'm present.
Ms. Mutahum, Chair.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, members. I'm present.
Morning.
Mr. Mulder, Chair.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, all. I'm present.
Good morning.
Mr. Thring, Chair.
Morning, Chair. Morning, members.
Good morning.
Chair, Mr. Custis, Chair.
Good morning, Chair.
Good morning.
Chair, that's all members on the platform. Mr. McPherson may join us later. He may have connected to problems, Chair. But we can proceed with the meeting, Chair.
Thank you very much. If we can have the agenda, please.
Chair, we have the agenda there, Chair.
Thank you. So we have opening and welcome, apologies, adoption of the agenda, briefing by the Companies and Intellectual Property Commission, CIPC, on its financial and non-financial performance 2021-22 financial year, and then the same for the Companies Tribunal, and then we'll have closing remarks. Hopefully not at 1, because I have to be in Cape Town at 12:30. Let's see how we can manage our time. So can I check for apologies, please?
No formal apologies. Mr. McPherson may join us. He may have connectivity challenges, Chair, but if there's an apology, I will inform the committee, Chair.
Thank you so much. Can I have a move and a second for the adoption of the agenda, please? I see Ms. Moatse's hand is up. Honorable Moatse.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning, everyone. I move for adoption of the agenda.
Recording in progress.
Thank you very much. Can we have a second for the adoption of the agenda?
Mr. Mbuyani, Chair.
Mr. Honorable Mbuyani.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I rise to second the proposal that we adopt the agenda. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Our agenda is adopted. So we'll go to the next agenda item, actually the next two agenda items. As I said previously, it's the CIPC briefing and the Companies Tribunal, the CT briefing on its financial and non-financial performance for 2021-22 financial year. So that is quarters 1 to 3. These quarterly reports form part of ongoing budgetary oversight of the committee. So the purpose of this today's briefings from these two entities, the CIPC and the CT, is to engage on their financial and non-financial performance for 2021 and 2022 financial year to date. So that takes us up to the 31st of December. This is so that the committee can assess the performance of these entities against their resource allocation in compliance with Section 5 of the Money Bills Amendment Procedure and the Related Matters Act, number 9 of 2009. So over, I think it's Ms. Matumela, the acting COO, who will introduce the entities and the reports. Thank you very much, Ms. Matumela.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning to the Chair and the Honourable Members. Chair for the Companies and Intellectual Property Commission, known as the CIPC, we've got Advocate Rory Vola, and he is accompanied by the CFO. He will lead the, they will take the pieces through that presentation. And for the Companies Tribunal, we have Dr. Ali Chiktay, who is the Chairperson, and he is with the COO, Monica Letingwane, and the CFO, Bridget Ramuhadi. They will take the PC through the presentation. Chair, we thank the Portfolio Committee for the opportunity to interact with the two entities. Thank you.
You're muted, Chair.
Oh, sorry about that. Over to you, Advocate Vola, the Commissioner, the ICC.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, Mrs. Hermans. Thank you for the opportunity, and thank you to the honourable members. I'm glad to see everybody. It's been a while, and I'm hoping all members are healthy and well. It's really been a pleasure for me to present our highlights of our performance during, as we all know, these very unusual times. I'm glad to say that we've adapted fairly well. We've got some achievements and some non-achievements, which I'll go through, but we continue on the basis that we like to see ourselves as an innovative and a continuous improvement organization, and we continue on that particular journey. I think, as Ms. Matumela said, I've got my CFO who joined me in terms of the financial performance. His name is Mr. Mohammed Jassat. So my presentation will take the format of, I will highlight some of the achievements that we've done over the period. I will also highlight the non-achievements that we've done in terms of our annual performance plan. It's been a trying time for us, as you know, that we are a frontline service delivery organization, but I think we managed to meet the challenges head on and to try and achieve our targets. I will also highlight some of the projects that we got in progress in terms of us always trying to move the organization forward. All I say is that when we achieve something at CIPC and we've rolled it out, that is taken to be a ground zero, that is taken to be baseline, what is coming next? So I always push that mantra at CIPC and make sure that we're always there to serve our clients, serve the people of South Africa better. Because the more you do, the more they expect, and that's the way that it should be. So we are quite proud of the fact that we're quite innovative and pushing forward in terms of that. I'll also highlight some of the challenges over the work from home program, looking at our telecommunications strategy going forward, how we try to maintain our services, the volume that we managed to do over the period of time, and also how our years and our strategy of implementing quite a robust automation and digitalized strategy has certainly assisted us and paid off, we believe, in terms of continue to deliver on our mandates and deliver on our services. And then we deal with issues around governance and financials. We look at the OIG's opinion. And finally, I'll also touch on the area of what we will call organizational redesign, because we need to look at how best we restructure ourselves, how best we look at the new forms of mandates and work that we need to perform, because we're constantly pushing the boundaries as far as that is concerned. We look at how automation has assisted us, but also how we need to look after our people in terms of empowerment and making sure that we move into areas that we don't do so well. And I'll also explain to that as to how we're going to try and achieve that. The presentation will be flighted by my CFO, Mr. Mohammed. Please put up the presentation.
Thank you, Commissioner. Can I request that I be allowed to share, please?
You have been made a co-host. You should be able to share.
Thank you.
Okay, let's move on. Next slide. Next slide. So the summary in terms of our overall performance, in terms of our annual performance plan, we've identified quarterly targets that we are required to meet over the period and which actually adds up into our financial year. We've achieved 32 to date of the 35 quarterly targets, which gives us a percentage of 91%. And as I go through the three performance areas and what we call our performance programs, I will highlight the areas that we have failed to achieve and what we are doing as far as trying to achieve it over the financial year. We've got three programs. One is our access program, which is our service delivery access. The other program we have is our innovation and creativity, which we will call our intellectual property aspect. And finally, we'll have our business registration and regulation, which is more to do with companies, compliance, enforcement, education awareness in that particular space. So as far as our achievements are concerned over the three quarters, I'm glad to say that our organizational redesign process is well underway. It's probably about 8 months in now. We are looking at areas that we need to enhance, especially with the fact that we are taken to be a fully-fledged regulator. You know, we are not an administrator of law anymore. When we did an amendment to the Companies Act, we move it over to full regulation. And also we want to bring new services on board, new areas of IT that we like to use, which I'll explain, and therefore we need to have specialization and capacity to do with those areas. I am not a proponent of using consultants. I try and shy away from that. I know we can't help it in some areas where we need speciality, but I would like to have people employed on my structure who can do the work on a daily basis, especially in those specialized areas. And therefore, organizational redesign process is well underway, and we're basically dealing with that. I'm also glad to say that we've developed a chatbot. You know, we're moving into the area of artificial intelligence. CIPC does something well, but it does something really well. We have dedicated a lot of time to our registration of companies, our automation space, our registration of IP, but if there's a query which relates to that, we sometimes have a falling down. And therefore, we want to bring in new means. We've got various aspects of how we resolve queries. We've got our call center. We've got a query resolution system via our website, and now we've gone into the artificial intelligence space whereby we've got a bot that will be able to resolve a large capacity of queries. I was dealing with the bot team yesterday. I think it's resolving currently in the 50s, but on a daily basis, we refine it so that it can answer more and resolve more queries. So that is a process we're undertaking, but we're also going into the whole artificial intelligence, machine learning, and we're going to develop a lot of processes as far as that is. Because it takes our service forward. It also is the using of benchmarks and the best in the market processes that we want to use and within CIPC. As far as our intellectual property space and what we're doing there, as far as the TVP hosted once again the WIPO Summer School, WIPO has complimented enough to say it's one of the better run ones. It's hosted globally around the world in certain areas. The Summer School in Africa is hosted by us for many, many, many years now. It certainly is a highlight of the IP calendar together with World Intellectual Property Day, and therefore it's part of our education and awareness activities. There's a lot of stakeholders that attend. We do it in a hybrid version. In the last summer school, we have some members students attending in-house, and we have others virtually. So it works quite well as far as reaching a number of those. We've also automated a number of business processes, and we continue to do it. This is something that will never end within CIPC, because we know that the value of us outreach and the value of access to our services certainly lies in us making it easier for our processes to be on the automated space in that sense. We also had to implement Poppy. I'm glad to say that we were consulting quite a lot with the information regulator, because one of our core functions at CIPC is disclosure of data. Corporate law is based on the disclosure principle of open and transparency as far as the register is concerned. So we had to work a lot with the information regulator, and they gave us an exemption as far as certain aspects of our registry and our databases is concerned. So we almost fully compliant as far as POPI is concerned. We had a guideline and a framework that we put in place as a government entity, and we continue to monitor it at an ExCo level. we successfully implemented our work from home or telecommuting strategy and framework. Our services never ever dipped. I'll come to that also in a slide going forward, but just to say that we certainly find it quite beneficial that our automation strategy brought us to the point where we could work from home and we could continue with our services and never have a dip in our service delivery standard. We also continue to enhance our flagship BIS portal. Committee members will know that the minister and as well as the presidency has mentioned it quite a lot in the previous sonars. It's a collaboration between CIPC and various other government departments, bringing in the one-stop-shop model. But the way that we had originally conceptualized this portal from a CIPC perspective is to use it as almost like a GE government portal. So year on year, we continue to add services, not only from the public space, but we also add services from the private sector. And through collaborations, we continue to pull on the particular portal, as I will show you going forward in terms of what we've done there. With collaboration, we continue with SARS in building their functionality in that. We also partnered with the National Small Business Chamber, who has about 35,000 members. This is part of our SME outreach. Many, many small businesses belong to this in various provinces. They get a lot of education and awareness activities through that. I speak a lot in some of these chambers. We use a lot of marketing of our services through the chambers, and therefore is part of our formalized outreach and program that we want to launch in terms of access. We also had a little bit of private sector partnership with Google SA, also through the BIS portal. We're glad to say that they approached us. We didn't approach them because they've seen that the BIS portal can be utilized for various means and various methods that they also want to get out as the private sector through no cost, of course, and therefore they provide services to the BIS portal for small businesses. The one service that they provide is that if a small business does not have a website, they then can have a little bit of a form to fill in the services that they have, and those particular services will then be flighted through Google on the Google search engine. And we also launched what is called our Director e-learning program, which I'll also speak about a bit later in more detail. But basically, it is our contribution to improving the corporate governance landscape of South Africa. It's enhancing of director education. We worked very well with the Institute of Directors of South Africa in coming up with this particular program. And we're quite proud of the fact that we are also moving CIPC into what we call a learning academy. You can move forward, Mohammed. So continuing on the achievements that we've had in terms of the quarters, a lot of our business processes were automated, and we implemented quite a few and deployed into our various systems. I'll quickly touch on those that we've had. We did a process of ceding of rights because, for example, on the BIS portal as well as the e-services, in terms of who can interact and transact with us, it's a refined group of those who belong to the particular company. But if that company wants to cede rights, if, for example, its accountant or its lawyer or its company secretarial agent, we now put in a functionality as far as that is concerned. It ties in very well with the transact in behalf, which speaks to a similar service that we've rolled out. Enterprise registration allow clients to create CIPC profiles on the organization. This is us to assist them in building their particular business profile, as we call it, and therefore it gives them marketing ability. It also gives them a bit of advertising in terms of who's who, what they do, where they're located, who's responsible for the running of the business, what is the services they provide, etc., etc. So it's part of our additional add-on and services that we want to have, a value add to the company world out there. We not only deal with automation in terms of our core services, but we also try and push the boundaries of innovation in terms of our corporate services and the back-end processes. So we're looking at automating the service provider submission of invoices, and we're well around the way as far as that is concerned, and therefore we're also working on other aspects in our back end to deal with that. We're introducing a new workflow system. You know, as you move on, technology moves on, we face with the scourge of what we would call legacy systems. But the problem with IT is that you do a new system today and within 2 years it becomes a legacy system. So it's a continuous movement of the goalposts and a continuous improving on that particular area. So we have now got a new system in place called K2. It is our workflow system, allowing clients to change details on the workflow system. We're dealing with it in terms of phases. It's going to be doing away with our previous system, which is Computron, and therefore we're spending a lot of capacity and capability and knowledge sharing and movement of data from the Computron system into the K2 system in order for us to deal with new technology. We also dealt with the PI score, which is a public interest score, which is was a robust change in company law, allowing companies to calculate that without them doing it on their own. We brought in a calculator on the K2 and allowed them to lodge annual returns correctly in terms of the score that they have. It also helps them with solvency and liquidity issues in terms of calculation as required by the Companies Act. We're revising our annual return system to add more functionality as far as that is concerned. There's aspects that we need to deal with in terms of beneficial ownership. We've got a beneficial ownership framework that we've developed, which will tie into the annual return system as far as anti-money laundering and terror financing is concerned, and as driven by National Treasury and our Department of Trade, Industry and Competition when it deals with the peer review system of our robust systems. Enhancing our business rescue filing, I'm glad to say that we had an initial release where business rescue licensing and the practitioners can lodge online now. Before it was strictly paper-based, they had to email the application. Now they can lodge it online. But also, when companies go into business rescue, we now have a process online in order for them to inform us and in order for them to lodge their reports. We also moved a lot into the mobile space. The members might know that CIPC has got a mobile app. We're building a lot of functionality on the mobile app. We put now name transfers on the mobile app. We put name extensions on the mobile app, as well as the normal volume items like company registrations, annual returns, and customer registration and the like. Financial accountability supplements has also been brought into the fray as far as automation is concerned and all other areas. The checklist is also on K2, which is our compliance checklist. I'll speak a lot about our regulatory role, what we plan to achieve as a regulator, and one of the functions that are contained within the Companies Act, it says that CIPC is responsible to monitor compliance with the particular act. The way we monitor compliance is that we've developed something called a compliance checklist. It goes hand in hand with our annual returns, and basically it's a number of items that a company has to fill in, but it's only at this stage with the larger companies. We don't want to burden the small companies, so it's not applicable to them as far as that is concerned. And therefore, we're moving quite forward as far as our automation strategy. Continuing on the achievements, we did a lot of benchmarking to ensure that we continue to move forward and have improvements of our service delivery standards. And all of that is obviously tied in. You can move forward, Mohammed. All of that is tied in with the completion of some of our electronic services. So I'm glad to say that 50% of the development of a new end return system is in place. By the second quarter of the new financial year, we will roll that out because we needed to add issues that are now required for us to put on there, like aspects of beneficial ownership we want to add and other aspects of domicilium, etc. As far as the development of our director changes is concerned on new e-services is our new K2 platform. We had to rebuild some of those components, and I'm glad to say that we're quite a long way down the road as far as that is concerned. First quarter of New Year, we will roll that out, and therefore we'll have a quick and easier way of changing directors. Even though we have one now, I always maintain that as you get better, clients expect more, and you need to meet that challenge accordingly. We also developed company addresses, and a change on that is a new services. We've also put on director changes on our mobile application. You know that the majority of our services now are also on the mobile app. People like to interact in their homes, they like to interact in their offices, and because we've got the pandemic and the state of disaster, it saves them the time of social distancing, that they can do a lot of their services online. 90% of company address changes is also there on the mobile, and name transfers is also put on the mobile. I'm also glad to say, as part of our outreach chairperson, we've also been hosting quite a lot of our African counterparts. Just over the last 2 days, Monday and Tuesday, I had the Office of Namibia, the Registrar of IP and the Registrar of Companies with us, and we've benchmarked and showed them a lot of our systems as part of assisting. We are in Lesotho in the next 2 weeks, and we're also in the process of setting up a fully-fledged two-day workshop for the SADC region when it comes to learning of technology, learning of law, learning of new processes, and most importantly, the ease of doing business components that go into the way that we do our work. As far as the CIP offices are concerned, I'm glad to state that we continue to maintain a presence in all 9 provinces. Not all of the provinces are CIPC offices. We work on a collaboration and partnership model. We have offices, our own fully-fledged offices in Pretoria, Johannesburg, Cape Town, but we work and we put our resources and we put our capability in the offices of our partners. We work very closely with Invest SA, for example. In all Invest SA offices, you will find the CIPC office in the Invest SA office. But we work with economic development provincial agencies, who also has our food technology support, who has some of our equipment even in those particular offices. And on a daily basis, we work with improving on their capability, as well as ensuring that their systems handle the volumes and handle the outreach that we want to see in terms of us being available and also being capable of servicing clients throughout South Africa. I always say that we work on a multi-channel approach. Some people want to work online, some people don't. Some people want to go into an office. So we have self-service centers where people will be able to assist it as far as that is concerned. As far as our CIPC channels, once again, going to the multi-channel approach, we give clients a choice as to how they want to interact with us. We have various platforms, and you can see the various platforms there. It's part of our access strategy to make sure that every South African has a way of interacting with CIPC in the way that they choose. So we have our CIPC website with all our gamuts of services which are contained within there. The majority of our e-services websites is our transactional portal, and therefore they're able to receive all the large volume and additional services contained within the CIPC website. The other channel that we have, and I should mention that these channels are a majority are 24/7. Obviously, the self-service centers are not, because they have to close at some point, but with that, our online portal and our online services are available every single day of the week. You can register a company on a Sunday morning if you so wish, and that's your thing. So we manage to make sure that we have all of that available. So we're redesigning our new website as well. I should mention, we're adding new functionality, new look and feel. It's a continuous improvement that we have to contain within that. We've got a CIPC mobile app. You know, everybody is stuck on their cell phones these days. Everybody wants to interact, wants to transact. They want to do as much as they can as far as that is concerned on the go, and therefore we have a mobility built into our services and our service offering. This portal, I think I mentioned, together with our banks, you can open your bank account, you can open your UIF, you can have your compensation fund. We even go as far as to give you an application to do a domain name, a website. You can also open up a business bank account. You can also apply for your BE certificate. And now we have issues like build profiles to profile your business, like a marketing opportunity, and we're building in other verifications going forward. Partner verification is coming soon, probably in the next month or two. We're building a lot of functionality whereby we're going to look at passports, accepting our passports, and working closely with partners who are able to use the BIS portal. Currently, partners can only use the e-services platform. SSTs, as I said, self-service terminals. Those are contained within all the provinces, and you'll be able to receive all the services that we have there. And then we also work in a lot of functionality as far as our emails. Next page, Robert. As far as our key services and our average turnaround times, we know CIPC, what we do is that we put out to the whole of South Africa, this is what you shall hold us to, and this is the standard that you will hold us to as far as our commitment is concerned when it comes to the time it takes for a person to receive a service. But we put a percentage of that. We don't say we meet it all the time, but in our APP, we say, for example, we will do patent application within 3 days, 95% of the, 95% of the time. We do understand that sometimes the system has glitches, sometimes the applications are not fully completed, sometimes there's a back and forth between attorneys, for example, and that obviously is the allowance that we make within the percentage of the service delivery standard. But I'm glad to say that our service delivery standards are quite acceptable as far as the majority of our high volume processes are concerned. You can see the IP aspects of patent design, copyright, and trademarks. Those are quite benchmarks against world standards. It meets a particular world standard as far as that is concerned. Name reservation, you put maximum time of 2 hours, but in reality, it takes a couple of hours, right? It's a couple of hours to get your name reserved, and company registration definitely majority 1 day. And if you're looking at the BIS portal, it's almost instantaneous. We did a bit of a study recently in the time. We did an analysis of the time it takes on the BIS portal, and the average time for registration was 15 minutes, taking into account all those particular services. So the BIS portal is actually really working really well, but it also ties up with the new e-services platform, which is taking the same amount of time. So as we go year on year within the organization, we do a review of our service delivery standards. We do a review of the system. We see the areas that we can improve on. We see areas that we can reduce the time for our service delivery standards, because as I said, this is what is contained within the APP, and this is what we get measured on by the Auditor General when the Auditor General does the performance information audits. So So we quite effectively, we continuously review it and continuously trying to improve it. It doesn't work all the time. We work in an automated space system for them, and I'll mention this in some of the programs that we have, how it impacts on us as an organization going forward. Just to touch on our telecommunication, because I know the program committee might be interested in the fact that how did you deal with the pandemic? How did you deal with your service delivery? I think I did mention earlier that because our automation journey started more than 10 years ago now, it led us to the part of being able to service our clients off-site. So within probably two months, we started moving my staff off-site. We gave them all the tools that they require. We gave them all the functionality they require. We gave them all the data that they require, the computers, the chairs, all of it, and they were able to maintain the service delivery standard. So much so, portfolio committee members, that we did the most amount of companies during the pandemic. 510,000 new companies were registered in the last financial year. It's the most that we've ever done. And the large majority of those companies were registered within the service delivery standard that we put out as per our annual performance plan. We've also seen a bit of spin-offs and a bit of savings. There's a reduction of leave time, responsibility leave has reduced. Our HR department is doing a lot of work in this area of getting the analysis and the statistics. We're seeing our sick leave reduce, lesser applications being put in. We're seeing reduced employee cost, travel, etc. And we also are seeing quite a bit of a reduce of the cost for CIPC in terms of telephone cost, printing, and the like. So there is a bit of a spin-off. We're starting to see it, but it's a hybrid system also. Some staff members, because of the nature of their work, the investigators, the IT guys, for example, and stuff, and others, they come into the office on a daily basis. We probably have the staff complement of approximately 500. We probably have about 150 people in the office. But we have this mixture between who works from home and who works from the office. We have a lot of meetings online, but we also have a lot of meetings in the office. It's a matter of also keeping the human elements and the collaboration element going internally by having meetings with people. Move forward, Mohammed. So I will deal with program one. Program one is service delivery and access. Program one deals with the areas of how do we meet our clients at various levels. Our clients are at various developmental levels. As I said, some want to go into an office, some want to use online services, some want to use mobile, some want to use chatbots, some want to use SSTs. We must meet them. We must meet every client where we find them. So the purpose of our service delivery access is to promote better access to our channels, promote better and easy access to the institution, and also to have the appropriate organization resource at their availability to do that. And the sub-programs will deal with areas around the Office of the Commissioner. We also deal with areas around IT. So IT plays a very large component as far as this is concerned. We need robust systems. We need robust innovation. And we need IT solutions that reach a broader range of clients as we go out there. As far as the overall snapshot of the performance in terms of what we achieved, we met 14 out of the 15 quarterly targets. We met 93% of what we wanted to achieve as far as the APP is concerned in this particular program. And I will discuss with the committee the one area that we did not meet. The one area that we did not meet was our website performance as part of our targets. And there's a couple of reasons why we failed to meet that. Remember, our transactional website sits on here. And during September last year, we were one of the organizations that were targeted for a ransomware attack. Within a few minutes, our IT early warning systems picked out that there was a lot of ping on our system. There was a lot of movement as far as people trying to get access to our backend systems. And what we had to do very, very quickly is bring those systems down. Because if they continue to be maintained, even though we have state-of-the-art security, we got McAfee, we got the top of the range, you know that the hackers are one step ahead. So we had to bring the system down. We contact our security, our service providers, and they said, bring it down immediately. So we brought it down. We managed to contain any form of breaches into the system. We have not picked out any form of data loss. The hackers did not get into to mess with our system. But the issue is that once you bring a system down, it takes a bit of time to bring it up. Because we've got something in excess of 100 servers at CIPC. We've got a multitude of databases between Informix and Oracle. And therefore, there is a strategic way the system got brought down. And there is a strategic way the system got brought up. We had to bring it up in a certain sequence, and those sequences take time. It took us between 3 to 4 days to bring those systems up. And therefore, we were in all intents and purposes, our website was down for that period of time. But we had to contain the valuable data that we hold, and we had to keep the integrity of our systems, which we are totally reliable on. You know, the CIPC does not rely on manual and paper documents and stuff like that, so we had to protect that integrity, and therefore we've done that. We've now gone out and did a forensic investigation through Microsoft Incident Response Team. They came out with a whole analysis in our system. According to their findings, they cannot see any form of data breaches. They picked up areas that we need to improve on. We've improved on those. We stabilized the environment, and we've done that. Another challenge that we were faced with is that we moved our connectivity to MTN. We had a different service provider, MTN won the tender, so we moved that over. You know that we work a lot with our partners in the collaboration space and the authentication and verification space. And the partner that we use is DHA, Department of Home Affairs. So once the connectivity goes down there, we also have connectivity issues with us. We're stabilizing that because we're having failovers and failover connectivity lines, and therefore we're trying to deal with the measures that we are putting in place as far as that is concerned. So that added to us not meeting the target in that particular area. In some of the volume that I want to just show to the committee, this is the volume that we have at our service centers, quarter one, quarter two, and quarter three. It's a stabilized volume. We see quite a number of our clients going to visit our service centers. As I said, the one that I put in place is Pretoria, Johannesburg, and Cape Town. But we are in every single province. But we look at the statistics and the analysis of the statistics of our service centers that we manage. But we work on a daily basis with our partners. They also give us some volumes as to the ones that are going through them. And we're working also closely with them on developing a new application system for them to deal with their volumes. What we also did within the pandemic period is that what we have seen in our service centers is people and the public picking up at our service centers. We then introduced a booking system. So a client goes in on their mobile or on their laptop. They can now book a slot with us. We provide the staff members and the time and the functionality to do company registration or maintenance of a company, director changes, and therefore they go into one of our centers. And this is the type of queries that we resolve. This is the type of service that we provide at the service centers, and this is the type of volumes that we see running through our service centers. Okay, move on, Mohammed. Program two is innovation and creativity promotion. This is basically intellectual property. The area and the purpose that we deal with is that we want to promote localization and local innovation and creativity. We're also very much involved in dealing with royalties and the distribution of royalties by working closely with the two collective societies called SAMPRA and IMPRA. I know that this particular committee is very familiar with them because of the amendments to the Copyright Act and the stuff that we're all dealing with in terms of that particular amendment, and therefore we accredit them and we do a little bit of regulation around them. We deal with their distributions and their distribution plans. We give them a bit of a hard time as far as this is concerned because it's money that's owed to them, it's money that will flow through to the various parties. We also provide a lot of legal advisory opinions, and we also add to the implementation of the national IP strategy and the IP regime. The big area that we're adding to the particular national IP regime, as approved by Cabinet many years ago, is introduction of substantive search and examination of patents, and I'll speak to that a little bit later in what we're doing. So creativity promotion comprises of two programs. We have innovation support, and we have the issue around the creative industries. Comment? In this particular program, we met 13 of the 15 quarterly targets. It was 87% achievement. Two targets were unfortunately not achieved, and I'll explain in the next slide as to what the non-achievement of those particular targets were. The committee will know from previous meetings that we are moving, South Africa is moving towards a search and examination patent jurisdiction. For us to achieve that, there's a couple of steps that we have to put in place. One is that we have to train substantive search and examination patent examiners. CIPC has been doing this for many, many years now. We as an implementation agency are very geared up towards this particular amendment, and we are geared up towards being a jurisdiction that examines patents. We did a first batch of examiners, which we trained them up fully. They are doing a lot of trial runs with attorneys. They're looking at actual applications. They're doing search reports. They're doing all of that. And we now have a second batch of interns. I think they're 1.5 years in terms of the internship program. Highly specialized people in biochemistry, chemistry, engineering, and the like. And we basically train them up to be search and examiners. But what they need in that particular area is a search tool. There are various search tools throughout the world. We work very closely with the EPO, which is the European Patent Office, and the area of also dealing with a lot of training in that particular area and the utilization of their tools. But we as an authority need to get our own tool, and we have to advertise for the tender. So the non-achievement was we did not finalize that particular tender because there's a lot of specification that go into that. And also now in the fourth quarter, which we wanted to put the tender out again, there's this issue around the court case that went as regards National Treasury and the tenders. So we're having a bit of an issue as far as that is concerned. That doesn't stop the work. The work still goes on because we are utilizing another search tool on a trial basis, and it also helps with our training of our examiners. As far as design registration is concerned, we do a lot of a mix between online and manual. We didn't meet some of them because of some of the manual that go in, applications that we receive. It also goes to the fact that sometimes we have to close the office. Our staff couldn't receive them because when we have a case of COVID, for example, we had to close the office for 2 days. We had to go and deal with the cleansing of the office, and therefore we had a bit of an issue as far as it's concerned. We only do about probably between 2,000 and 3,000 design applications a year, and I think we by and large have now caught up in this particular area. You can move on, Mohammed. So some of the turnaround times we see as far as in IP is concerned, our patent applications, we continue to meet our service delivery standard of 2 days. As I said, there are percentages attached to that. Sometimes we don't meet them because we have to send them back to attorneys, or the patent application doesn't meet our full criteria, and therefore there's an argy-bargy back and forth. So that is the reason why we have those particular percentages, which are contained within the various quarters. In terms of design applications, I've mentioned that, and copyrights in films, we don't receive very many films. It is the only form of copyright that has to be registered with us, and therefore, in the quarters for which we had received, we met those particular standards the majority of the time. I want to mention the fact that we also, in the CIPC space, as far as our new system development is concerned, we're moving toward the deployment of a fully automated IP administration system. This particular system is called IPAS. It is used around the world by various patent and IP offices. It is a system which was developed by the World Intellectual Property Organization. And I'm also pleased to say that the World Intellectual Property Organization has an MOU with the CIPC, whereby they have sent technology specialists that sit in the CIPC to assist us with this. And therefore, we are well down the way in terms of dealing with the movement from what we now call the SWORD system into the IPAS system. And this will be our new system for patent registration, but also in trademark registrations, because we can use exactly the same system to deal with those particular domains of IP. It is an end-to-end system. It is fully automated. It also has full compliance to our service delivery standards. We are working very, very close with the business intelligence that goes in the background. And also, there has been trial run in terms of the movement of data between the old system and the new system, in terms of us having that particular area. So we will have movement of IPAS in the coming year, and that will deal with our new innovation in IP. We do a lot of work as far as education and awareness in IP. Right? I think I didn't mention the summer school was through the virtual platform, but we had others who were present. We work very closely with universities. I just put out a new letter to a few other universities, asked them would they like to host the summer school this year, because this is on an annual basis that we educate the citizens of South Africa and those abroad to come and utilize the WIPO summer school. We use lecturers which are the best in the world. We have WIPO lecturers that assist us. We have South African attorneys or even attorneys from the rest of the world. We have IP specialists, and basically it is us giving back in terms of spreading the word, but also increasing of our localization aspects and what we want to achieve as part of our strategy is concerned. Also, we engage a lot with industry sectors, and there's a whole host of them that you can see. As far as the quarters is concerned, Gauteng Women in Business, a couple of universities. We work very, very closely with CIDA. CIDA has a very good outreach program. We form a very core basis when it comes to the area of IP, and therefore we deal a lot of work in that area, as also other regulators that we like to assist in that space. We also do a lot of work in IP enforcement, and I'm glad to say that the collaboration that we have between public and private is working really, really well. We do not only coordination of anti-counterfeiting and anti-piracy raids together with the South African Revenue Service and the Customs Authority. We work very, very closely with the South African Police Service, as well as the National Prosecuting Authority and the Judiciary. We not only do that type of work, but we're also very much involved in educating other regulators, other judicial authorities, and even looking at magistrates and judges. We speak a lot to them, we have a lot of outreach to them, because IP is a very specialized field, and they need to deal with it in a special way when it comes to all the activities located within the IP enforcement space. We also see ourselves at the CIPC as a data-driven organization. Data is a key to a lot of things that we do. Data is a decision-making for my Department of Trade, Industry and Competition, as well as other departments when it comes to some of their activities and some of their indicators and key performance areas, and therefore we also place a lot of reliance on that. And the way that we are developed a new system is a cell phone application to collect data on anti-counterfeiting activity. We look at the products, we look at case analysis, we look at the movement of those particular cases to the South African Police Service, because we work very, very closely in developing of this particular application. And during quarter two, we use this internet-based technology to help us assist online piracy and counterfeiting. It gathers the data, it does analysis of the data, we work very closely with our Swiss counterparts, and therefore lessons learned, and we share the expertise in the online piracy as well as the enforcement space. We also hosted hybrid training for enforcement partners. Also, just last month, I hosted a big workshop in Cape Town with the NPA and the South African Police Service, as well as WIPO, dealing with education, speaking about anti-piracy, 2-3-day workshop. We even put them through a little bit of an exam at the end of it to build our South African capability in dealing with some of the scourges related to counterfeiting activity and piracy activity. Move on, Mohammed. Well, I think I did mention this is a bit of a snapshot of all the stuff that we're doing there, not taking into account our normal operational plan, our normal operation work. So I did mention IPAS, and we're doing ongoing training and moving with that. Comprehensive examination of patents. Most of our interns are under 35. They are highly educated from the universities. They are very excited. They've been on this program for long. They're learning a lot about intellectual property, and we're building up our South African capability to deal with comprehensive examination and our training in that particular area. We're also proud of the IP for SME program. We build capacity countrywide. We're speaking to various components of the IP space. We work very closely with the Swiss, who help us with material in taking the length and breadth of IP to South Africans. We have our stakeholder maps that we work with. We go to every province in South Africa. We work closely with the Deputy Minister Gilles program of outreach, not only in companies, but also in IP, because we certainly want to increase the level of IP knowledge, but also we want to increase the level of localization of patents. On that particular level, we also have a program that we've been running now for many years called the Inventors Assistance Program. We were the fourth country in the world to implement this particular program. It basically assists indigent inventors of IP. We put them through a test. We put them together with IP attorneys at no cost to them, and they are able to look at whether their inventions have patentability. Many don't. A lot of people think they have the most wonderful invention, but when you put it to the test of new or application as far as whether it's novel or not, we find that many of them do not ask. But we do have a lot of ones that come to the forum as well. We collaborate with the Japan IP Office to train our examiners. Japan IP Office is one of the biggest offices in the world for IP, and therefore we get some of the best training through them. These days it's very much virtual online, and therefore our examiners and our interns have the best of very large offices. We collaborate a lot with our BRICS partners. We have a work stream. We've been collaborating with our BRICS partners since 2013. Training of our examiners, working through a couple of aspects of IP for SMEs, are also looking at patent aspects, looking at databases, exchange of patent information, and there's a lot of work that happens within that particular collaboration. And then we have a trainer-trainer program on various courses that are given by WIPO, as well as training hours and then delivered to the rest of the organization, as well as what we want to do as CIPC being a learning academy. We will also have aspects within that particular learning academy dealing with of IP and IP knowledge. The last program that we have is one of the larger ones, is obviously our company space. This particular purpose is to halt the reputation of our businesses by ensuring that we improve on the corporate landscape, also to improve on our area of corporate governance. That is the reason why our investigators sit in this particular space, but also to look at the area around corporate reputation and the transparency of financial information. We provide a lot of policy and insights. We do a lot of research in this area. We put out a lot of papers to guide people in this particular area. And we do a lot of outreach and education in this particular area, in this particular program. I'm glad to say that all our targets as per our APP were met in this particular program. We did not have any outages in terms of. We spent a lot of time. We spent a lot of effort because it's the largest volume that flowed through the CIPC. To say that this is a snapshot of our every turnaround times, there's a little bit of anomaly in trademark registration. We see a zero there. The reason that will be explained is because we had a movement of our files. Every couple of years, I think it's about 5 years or so, we have to put out a new tender for the movement of files. CIPC has 11 million files, something like 8 kilometers of files. It was Metro File at one stage, and it went to Iron Mountain, and now we've got a new company that has come in. We won the tender, and therefore we had to move all of those files. Trademark registrations, as far as oppositions are concerned, as far as the checking of previous is concerned, has a little bit of a manual aspect to it, and therefore there was a bit of anomaly in that particular quarter, which we've now caught up, because the movement of files is taking off, it's getting a bit better, and therefore we were able to locate those particular files going forward. Then reservations, we met our standard. Company registrations, the biggest volumes, as you can see, we're probably going to do close to 500,000 once again this year, and cooperative registrations, we met our targets as far as our SDS is concerned. The next one is also what we would call the maintenance of companies. South Africa has a lot of director amendments that come through the wash. As you can see, we're probably averaging around 38,000-39,000 on a quarterly basis. But a lot of it is electronic. We do have very few that manual applications are submitted to us, and therefore we are able to meet those particular challenges. Member amendments is to deal with changes to close corporations. Company changes is MOI changes, and company financials year ends have all met their particular targets in the quarter. I should mention that these targets are audited by the Auditor General as far as the performance is concerned, and these APP targets will once again be dealt with in terms of our regulatory audits, which has just started in the last couple of weeks. Annual returns is one of our largest volumes. Not only is it because we are a self-funded institution, we receive no money from the National Revenue Fund, and the largest amount that we get in terms of that is our annual return program, as you will see when our financial information is presented a little bit later. We're glad to see that there's a bit of an uptick when it comes to the lodgement of annual returns, but in South Africa we also have large volumes of deregistrations. We're probably going through a process in the coming months of deregistering between 300,000 and 400,000 companies on the register. Those are basically dormant. We send lots of notifications, we give a lot of time, we give them actually a couple of years in order for them to inform us if they are functioning or not. But we will go through a deregistration process, because what the law says is that after 2 years, if you have not lodged your annual return, the law will take it to you that you're not functioning, and we need to clean up the register. One of the core functions that we do, which is also contained within company law, is keeping reliable, up-to-date registers, and therefore the annual return program assists us as far as that is concerned, and therefore we are quite glad that our outreach is making sure that we have an increase in the volume that we receive as far as the annual return is concerned. We also contain within the particular annual return program is what we call the compliance checklist program. I think I did mention that a bit earlier, trying to also improve the compliance and corporate governance landscape, and also to improve on the education space through the compliance checklist. When we see there are anomalies in the compliance checklist, we then can hone in and target our education activities, also versus our director e-learning program, into what we want to achieve as an organization as far as education is concerned. The next aspect that people always ask is about what are we seeing as far as business rescue is concerned. This is a snapshot for the quarters between the April and December 2021. We're seeing very similar numbers. Question I always get asked, am I seeing an increase in the volume of business rescues because of the pandemic? No, we are not seeing an increase in those particular numbers. They're averaging about the same as previous years prior to the pandemic. And we're seeing probably going to average around 380, 400, maybe just over 400 as far as the numbers that we're going to have running through the business rescue process. I think as you can see from the next page, what we are seeing in terms of an analysis of business rescues for all the years, we can be sitting on, I think, more that was up until January, up until December, we're now in March, I think we're probably going to hit around the 400, 350 to 400 mark of the new rescues that are flowing through South Africa. Another aspect of the status of business rescue proceedings, where are they, what are the specifications of what they have achieved, what they attained. Termination means that the company came out of rescue, they went back to full operations. Active means those are active business rescues which are currently ongoing. Liquidations versus terminations, you can see is 12%. It means that the rescue was unsuccessful, it led to the liquidations. And then we've got issues like knowledge, you shouldn't have gone into rescue, substantial compliance to business rescue. So this is a snapshot of what we've seen for the companies that have gone through. We do see that the larger rescues of companies take longer in terms of the reporting process. They have to report to us every 3 months. You know, SIA took probably about 18 months, and we see some of those larger entities being that. We're glad to say that business rescue is now fully entrenched in the markets. As far as the way that we're seeing an improvement in the way that the licensing is done, an improvement in the way that the regulation of business rescue practitioners is concerned, as well as the fact that we're seeing better reports that are coming through from those particular business rescue practitioners. As far as our corporate compliance and enforcement is concerned, one of our functions that we do in this particular area is to analyze financial statements. We use a program called XBRL, which stands for Extensible Business Reporting Language. Basically, what that does is that it makes sure that those companies that are required to file financial statements with us do it in exactly the same way. We can compare apples with apples as far as our analysis of those financial statements is concerned. We do a risk-based assessment. As you can see, 4,000 were received, but we only reviewed 199. It's based on our capability, but also based on risk-based. We do larger ones that we want to analyze. We've got a couple of guys who are in our office, investigators who are trained up in international financial reporting standards, and they are able to analyze whether they are meeting those particular standards. If the standards are not met, we have a lot of tools at our disposal. One is called compliance notices. We'll be able to submit those compliance notices to companies that are not compliant, and basically we're able to go after them with the big stick. XBRL also gives us the ability to have a lot of business intelligence. It gives us a taxonomy to make sure that they file within the financial reporting standards that is contained within the Companies Act. But we've also brought in elements within that particular taxonomy that deals with the issue of that we want to see in terms of company law regulation. So we've got about 40 or 50 elements contained within that. Are you solvent and liquid, reckless trading, et cetera, et cetera, is also contained with that. This all speaks to our regulatory role and what we want to do as far as us spreading out our reach and being a reputable and creditable regulator in the corporate governance landscape. We work, reportable irregularities is also something which is contained within company law. We work very closely with other regulators, and we work closely with other professional bodies. It's basically that when an audit is conducted or an independent review is conducted on those particular financials, if that independent review or if that auditor picks up that there are substantive issues as far as those financials are concerned, they must report to us. It is a positive obligation in law, and therefore they report these reportable irregularities to us. We go out, some of them we pass on to other regulators because it's not within our purview or within our mandate to do so, and others we go into a fully fledged investigation in terms of that is concerned. We need more capacity. Part of our audit process is to bump up and to beef up our regulatory capacity to have more investigators coming on board. Just this, in the last 2 weeks, we're going to put out adverts for more investigators, and therefore this all speaks to us improving our corporate compliance and enforcement functionality in this particular area. Some of the high-profile cases, we don't know, but this is just a snapshot of the ones in the first quarters. The African Post Office, we took them on because they haven't had financials for many years now. who have just received a notice from them that they will complete the set of financials at the end of March. We've given them some time to complete that. We've done a lot of areas around larger companies like Danau, Cipla, Metro, Nova, and must have seen some of the areas in write-ups in the newspaper, how we went after the Nova Group in terms of the property syndications, and therefore we play quite a fundamental role as far as ensuring that the objects and the mandate of the of company law is concerned. We also do what we call review of certain companies. We look at newspaper articles. We do a lot of investigations based on what we see. Not only can you wait to send us an investigation, but we also do it on a proactive basis based on our ability to do so. Some of the enforcement cases and the type of contravention that we see coming through is that no annual general meetings were held. We get shareholder will complain that they've failed to have meetings. We then send out notices to the companies. We give them compliance notices. We never disclose remuneration, illegal appointments of directors, etc., etc., etc. We place a lot of emphasis on social ethics. This was largely debated in Parliament many, many, many years ago. We did a lot of analysis of the Johannesburg Securities Exchange as to whether those companies have social ethics committees. And we basically have boardroom visits and also dealing with issues of ensuring that they meet the requirements under the Companies Act. As far as the last component of this particular program is our education and awareness. I think I mentioned quite a lot as far as the director's e-learning program, but just to say that we want to be a learning academy. Okay, the e-learning program is but the start of something bigger that we have a strategy to perform. We're going to bring aspects of IP, we're going to bring aspects of companies, we're going to look to have specialist lecturers who are going to work with us closely at the CIPC, we're going to look at having a full program, we're even going to go as far as to work with the Department of Education to bring some of the IP aspects into schools. We noticed that from other jurisdictions, they have a lot of education activity within schools. We do a lot of work at universities currently, but we need to take it one level lower, and therefore we started talking to the Department of Education in terms of their program and also entrenching aspects of IP within the school's curriculum. We do numerous webinars. We've moved online. We've moved due to the limitation of MS Teams. We're using another program now. I just can't remember what it is, but we use a platform whereby we can host probably 1,000, which we have on many of our webinars. We have webinars almost on a weekly basis in conjunction with our partners, but it is quite well received. We promote them through our social media platforms. We have a very large social media presence on Facebook, large social media presence on Twitter, LinkedIn, and all of those. So we really do a lot of education and awareness and marketing campaigns using all of these particular means. Some of the way forward for CIPC, we want to strengthen our virtual channels to have all our products and services, and we've got a program, something that I meet with on our IT team on a weekly basis called Business Prioritization Forum, where we look at what is to come, what is the development we've achieved, what are the new developments coming to the pipeline, in order for us to make sure that we cover all the aspects of our business processes, and to make sure that we cover all the access of our various channels that we want to reach as far as our products and services is concerned. We look at revising all our mobile services. It must function exactly the way as our web, our internet services is concerned. We're doing a lot of work in the mobile space, as I said, and there's a lot of functionality coming through that, place a lot of emphasis on that. We want to enhance our artificial intelligence, machine learning, and our chatbot services, because, as I said, when there is a breakdown sometime in our query resolution, we don't answer that really well, and I make no bones about that. We need to enhance our call center. We're moving our call center into the cloud. We're getting new call center agents, but we're also working in resolving queries using artificial means. It's another way of our customer electronic channels, and therefore we are working on our various phases. We're on phase one of the chatbot, which is a rollout. Phase two and phase three are coming based on our learnings. I mentioned AI. We also want to move into processing of names and intellectual property using that, and that's something that we're developing. Upfront channels, we increase the uptake of virtual channels. Our digital marketing and branding is also a core part of what we do. And we're also looking at strengthening our partnerships, our existing one, and we continuously look for new partnerships. You know, we never rest on our laurels. A collaboration is one of our core values at TIPC, a lot of the good work that we've done, we've seen, because we have done it, because we collaborated with the likes of SARS, we collaborated with the likes of the Department of Labor, we collaborated with private sector partners in the banking institution, we collaborated with the verification of the Department of Home Affairs, we collaborated with the private institutions like Google and stuff. So partnerships we continue to seek out. We even so far as seeking a new partnership with the construction board. They have many of the licenses that they deal with and licensing regime into companies that they want to partner with us as far as water verification concern as far as in that area. Some of the further automation that they mentioned, we have further director verification which is coming now. We're going to automate director changes fully in a new way. We've got automated director changes, but we are doing a new iteration of it which is going to make it much faster than it currently is. And we're also going to have a voluntary peer registrations coming to the pipeline. Something else that we've got in the next financial year, we're working closely with the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition and the PFIs, the financial institutions, NEF, an Empowerment Fund, and IDC, Industrial Development Corporation. They have asked us to please assist us with the due diligence when it comes to the area of them making decisions when it comes to financing. So we're also working closely with them. We're probably going to work through the PIS portal and do a verification in that particular area. Thank you very much, Chairperson and members. That's a snapshot of our performance, and we'll move on to financial performance. My CFO will take over. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Commissioner, and good morning to the committee. I will be taking you through the financial performance quarters 1-3. We'll commence with an overview of the financial results, the audit outcome and financial results. For the past 3 years, in fact, past 5 years, CIPC achieved 5 consecutive clean audits. Over the past 3 years, our financial performance surplus for the year has been increasing. It shows a trend of increasing from 81 million in March 2019 to 122 million in March 2021. Our net assets position, that is our financial position, also showing a trend of an increasing trend of 421 million in March 2019, increasing to 550 million in March 2021. This despite us surrendering surpluses to National Treasury during those periods. So overall, CIPC's financial position is good, and we should be sustainable for the foreseeable future. The overview of the financial results for the quarters, for the first 3 quarters of 2021-22 financial year. As we can see, our revenue, we have consistently exceeded our revenue budget for the 2021-22 year overall quarters, as well as come in under budget for expenditure for the quarters 1-3 in 2021-22. This has resulted in us actually increasing our amended budget, or amending our budget to increase our budget to the forecasted revenue for the end of the year, as well as decreasing our expenditure for the end of the year in order to forecast or to better forecast for the end of the 2022 financial year. Our revenue per quarter budget plus actual. You can see our annual returns consistently achieved above budget, with 23% above budget in quarter 1, 25% in quarter 2, and 19% in quarter 3. This has resulted in us having a year-end forecast of about 407 million rand annual returns. The majority of our revenue is from annual returns annually. Companies and cooperative registrations a bit lower than anticipated, with between 6-12% lower than budget between quarters 1 and quarter 3. Disclosure as well a bit lower than budget, with between 9-16%. And IPF, again, above budget. Our big revenue drivers being annual returns and one other one, IP, has resulted in us coming in above budget in total revenue over the course of the 3 quarters, of between 14% in quarter 1, 15% in quarter 2, and 10% in quarter 3. The revenue analysis, if we have to compare to the previous year committee, annual returns up about 12 million rand since previous year, and that also reflects in our increase compared to our budget. Companies and disclosure a bit lower than previous year on both instances, intellectual property a bit lower than previous year, but we did budget accordingly because we did see that change in the previous year, and interest revenue was higher than anticipated compared to the same period in the previous year. We now come to our expenditure. Budget was the actual in the three main components of expenditure, which is our employee costs, our operating expenditure, and our depreciation. For all three quarters, as I stated earlier on the overview, we have achieved savings on expenditure. Employee costs, we have achieved significant savings of 23% in quarter one, 14% in quarter two, and 15% in quarter three. Operating and administrative expenditure, we see that in quarter one, we were 54% below our budget, but that has now, we have spent a bit more and come in a bit closer to budget, moving to 39% below budget in quarter three. And our depreciation and amortization is a bit higher than anticipated budget, and the reason for that being that we replaced computer hardware in the prior year, which resulted in higher depreciation rate in the current year. So overall, we have come in under expenditure, under budget for expenditure in the current year. If we have to go and look at the expenditure per quarter, quarters one, two, and three, we can see that employee costs in quarters one and two account for 69% of our total expenditure, but our year-end forecast, it comes down to about 64%. With that difference, with that movement going to the goods and services, moving from 26% of actual expenditure to about 32% of actual expenditure. And the difference between those two being the depreciation sitting at between 5 and 4% for the year. Our operational expenditure between current year, December 2021, versus December 2020, we can see employee costs have basically remained the same, a 200,000 rand difference over the course of the period compared to the prior year. So 264.7 million in 2021 as of December 2021 compared to 264.5 million as of December 2020. So therefore, employee costs have not increased compared to the prior year. The increase in expenditure is primarily related to the other two areas, which is our operating expenditure, which increased by about 8 million rand, and our depreciation and amortization, which increased by about 3 million rand. Can we now come to the capital expenditure analysis? Our budgets for capital expenditure on hardware and software cumulatively was about 45 to 46 million rand. We haven't spent against this budget in quarters one, two, and three, and I think the reason for that primarily was because of, as Commissioner stated, the issues which we had on the cyber attack, and this resulted in IT resources being focused on addressing the issues which we had on the attack. However, in quarter four, I think we are now moving forward with a lot of the purchase or planned purchases of IT hardware and software, and we should see by the end of the year a significant portion of that planned capital expenditure being spent. Whatever we don't manage to spend in this last quarter will in all probability be moved to the next budget, and those planned capital expenditure programs will then occur in the next financial year. Chair, that brings me to the end of the financial section. I'll hand back to the Commissioner to conclude and close. Thank you.
Thank you very much, CFO. Thank you, Chairperson, all the members for the time. That's it from us. In fact, we're more than happy to take any questions or comments that the members might have. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Advocate Waller. And Mr. Jassat for the presentation. In terms of time and our time constraints today, I want to propose to members that we take the next presentation from the company's tribunal, and then we have one question session after that. I see a hand, though, from Honorable Custard.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, it seems like there's not many hands, Firstly, and I only have one question. I don't imagine it will take very long.
Okay. So you're proposing that we take questions first for the session presentation?
Yes, if possible. I only have one question.
Okay. Yeah, no, I see there's more hands coming, so let's do that. You can proceed, Honorable Cuthbert.
Thank you very much, Chair. Am I audible?
Yes, you are audible.
Sure, thanks very much. So thank you very much for the presentation from the CRPC. I think it's nice to hear the vigor coming out of the Commissioner, and he seems very passionate about the job that he's doing. And I think that's a nice change from some of the other officials that come to visit the Portfolio Committee. So good on him for that. And it seems that they've built up a nice culture at the CRPC, and I hope that that continues into the future. I just have one question. So prior to the World Bank's ease of doing business report being canned because of certain irregularities, one of the key reasons that South Africa found itself so low on those rankings was the ability to actually get a business registered along with all the necessary approvals. So, I mean, workmen's compensation, SARS clearance, and the rest of it. Could you please indicate to me if they've got any kind of measure to tell the Portfolio Committee how much they've improved in terms of turnaround time on registering a business? Because it seems, anecdotally, that it has improved quite vastly. So I just want to get an understanding from the Commissioner as to whether or not this has improved in the way that it seems. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you. Honourable Mbuyane.
No, thanks, Chairperson, for the opportunity. I wanted to second your proposal that we receive the other briefing before we can discuss. Thank you.
Thank you. I think then we'll go to the second proposal. The second presentation, and then we'll get responses after we've taken questions. We note the question from Honourable Cuthbert. Can I then hand over to Dr. Chikte for the Companies Tribunal presentation, please?
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, honorable members of the committee, and thank you for giving us the opportunity to present before you today, and thank you for that. I'd like one of our Solly from the tribunal to put up the presentation, please. I'm not sure if he's got co-hosting rights.
Andre, can we give...
Solly?
I've given him...
Oh, you've given, okay. Thank you. Are you succeeding, Mr. Mahrabane? Can we hear from Mr. Mahrabane because he has co-hosting rights? Otherwise, somebody else must share the presentation.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm trying from my side as well.
Okay. Yeah, seems like that's working. I think maybe we must ask Mr. Makhebane to stop sharing so that you can share Ms. Ledingwana.
I'm calling him now.
Okay.
Soli, are you able to share? No, they have granted you right.
Okay, we'll just take a breather while the company's tribunal team sort themselves out.
Host, can you please give Soli rights? He says he doesn't have a right. He had only in other sessions, but not this.
It says yes, he's a co-host.
Chairperson of the tribunal, can you go on with the introductions for so long?
Okay, I think we still need to. All right, I think let me start in the meantime, even without the presentation. And I think if you can't do it, I think maybe you should just share it from your side.
Okay, can you continue the presentation, the introduction? Then we'll ask the PC secretary to sort out with your team behind the scenes. Dr. Chikte, thank you. Proceed.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, everyone. I'm going to talk. Thank you for the opportunity. And let me just introduce our team. It's myself, Ali Chikte. Chair the tribunal, then I've got Mr. Mali Tratsa Monica Leringwani, the COO, and Mr. Bridget Ramahari, the CFO, who joined us this month. Our presentation, the three of us will be presenting. Just to talk about what we're going to be talking about, first we'll talk about the background, the mandate of the tribunal, then we'll give you a structure of organogram of what makes up the tribunal, the benefits of our services, the nature of cases we handle, and then the outputs for 2021, 2022, and then the key highlights for quarter one, two, and three, and then the management of cases, and then progress against milestones. We're going to talk about adjudication, human resources, and our stakeholder engagement. And myself and the COO will talk about those things. And then the CFO will talk about the financial issues, the financial summary, budget spent per quarter, revenue collection, expenditure per quarter, financial performance, financial management summary, and challenges. Okay. Thank you. Now we're looking at the background and mandate. And I think this is important for us to talk about the tribunal. With regard to what our mandate is and what our background is, before we look at exactly what we've done over the last year. Right? You can see the company's tribunal was established in terms of the Companies Act, and we've only been operating since September 2011, so that's just over 10, 11 years now. We're independent, although we form part of DTI in a sense. Our mandate is adjudication, dispute resolution, and any other function assigned to us by the Act or Schedule 4. Right. Our vision is important. I think that's to provide alternative dispute resolution forum that promotes fair and ethical business practices. And I think that's an important vision because the idea is to encourage investment to ensure that disputes are resolved quickly and amicably. And I think the tribunal is well positioned to do that. Our members, we require 11, we're currently 8 members with the chair and members, and I think our membership, members' terms are coming to an end, and the idea is to renew it or to appoint new members. Our staff complement, we've got 21 approved per organogram, but we've only got 14 positions that are funded, and 12, I suppose 13 are full right now because our CFO joined us this month. But as of December, we only 12 were full, and then 2 needs to be full. Next page, please. This structure, I don't know if you can see it, but you've all got copies of it. The green are the positions that are full. The blue are the ones that had to be filled. As I said, the CFO one is now that has been filled. And then the white are the positions that are not filled. And there's quite a lot of them, obviously due to funding constraints. We're unable to fill some key positions. And we've got our staff often taking on the load of positions that don't necessarily fall within their workload, that fall within their, I suppose, their job description, but they're taking on more than they should, and you know, thanks to them for doing that. The next slide, please. The benefits of the tribunal, and I think one often forgets the benefits of the tribunal because it's there to provide easy access to justice, cost effective compared to litigation, no cost, no need for legal representation. What's interesting is that at least 75% of our matters that come to us are by the lay person. It's not by law firms. 25% come to law firms, and I think that's encouraged because we're going to cut away the legal costs. It's informal, flexible. The idea is to push for more mediations in order to preserve business relationships that are critical to sustain business operations. Remember, we did a lot of name disputes, a lot of directorship disputes as well, especially in small businesses. So with ADR, the idea is to maintain those relationships. If you have small businesses, directors are often friends or family members, so the repercussions of those relationships can go beyond just the company disputes. But ADR parties control the outcome of the cases, they manage reputations, settlement agreements can be made orders of court. This saves time and costs. So the benefit of ADR and the benefit of the tribunal is quite critical. Next slide, please. The next slide. Okay. The nature of cases we deal with, and I think it's an important slide. Sorry, go back, please. The nature of cases we deal with, and I think this is an important slide. It has the nature of cases from 2016 until 2021. And if you look at the type of cases we deal with, quite a bit is on director disputes. Some interesting cases on director disputes we've seen over the last, and there's been 2019, 2020 was quite a bit, 2020, 2021 is quite a bit. And I think it's also because of the small businesses, directors often in conflict with one another. The ones I've dealt with have been family members, fathers suing sons or spouses suing each other. And also the lockdown hasn't made it easy because of the financial difficulties faced by small businesses. Often you'll have disputes playing out amongst directors themselves. Name disputes have been quite high, although 2020-21 was much lower. But that's often companies using the same name as another company. And then it just brought to the attention and then comes to extension of AGMs, as you see, there's a big jump in 2020, 2021. That's because during the lockdown, difficult for people to have AGMs. We're used to face-to-face AGMs, and all of a sudden you put in a world where everything is done online. And I think initially it's been difficult for people to have that, and therefore they've asked to have the AGMs a bit later. I think people are getting used to doing online meetings a bit more now, but you could see a big jump in 2020-21, and I think for obvious reasons, they just couldn't have their AGMs face-to-face, and they wanted a bit more time to do that. Name disputes, social ethics committees, again, they are asking for exemptions for social ethics committees. Sometimes certain companies have structures where they already have a similar type of committee that deals with social and ethics, but the fact that we have those types of committees in South Africa, I think, they check on the environment, they check on the company's responsibilities with regard to labor, I think is something that's commendable, but sometimes they apply for exemptions for that. We do grant exemptions in very strict cases. And I think the list of a number of type of cases we can hear, I mean, the jurisdiction is not that much, it's quite limited, but I think there's quite a bit of room for increasing our jurisdiction and using us much more efficiently, I think. The next slide, please. Okay. I'm going to give the COO an opportunity to speak on some of the slides, and I think the CFO will speak thereafter and come in at the end again. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson of the Tribunal. Good morning, Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee, honorable members, and good morning, colleagues. The Companies Tribunal is an institution focused on dispute resolution and adjudication. And so as you will realize from our report today, our core mandate is around these two areas. And so our APP points to them as well. So in terms of the programs, we have two, the one being focused on the mandate that I've just outlined. And program two is a program intended to support the achievement in the core mandate. With regards to program one being adjudication and alternative dispute resolution, we have the turnaround times as follows. The maximum is 40 days, followed by the 30 days in terms of unopposed applications. And the 40 days relates to the opposed applications, but where we have cases on alternative dispute resolution, there we target only 25 days as a turnaround that time to finalize them. So this period could of course be less, but we would always have to remember that when it comes to dispute resolution and adjudication, there is a human element involved, so we do use our members in terms of physically handling these applications and also online. So it takes a bit of time, but compared to the timelines that are in the ordinary court, these timelines are actually quite good, comparatively that is. Still under Program 1, in 2019, we introduced our case management system, which is an online application system. And in terms of this, because we do want the applicants to move over to the electronic submission of applications, we target 50% of the applications that we receive to be done online. So that's in terms of the targets on the core programs. Then coming to the program number two on administration, which as I said is intended to support the delivery on the core, we look at five areas which are around capacity building, stakeholder engagement, seminar, research, and procurement. And regrettably, I can already mention that on the areas of seminar and of research, we are going to report an underachievement in some of the quarters. We are also going to be reporting an underachievement with regards to the case management system, but I'll get to the details of that when I get to it. Can you please go to the next slide? And if it is possible, could you please display in slide mode? Okay, so this key highlight are only about quarter three. Of the three quarters that we are reporting on, the highlights are only focused on quarter three. So as you can see again on the core mandate, which we start with here, we are reporting overachievement in the three areas of the turnaround times of 40, 30 and 25 days. Whereas for opposed applications, we targeted 93%, leaving 7 for a margin of error. We actually achieved 100%. And with regard to unopposed applications, where we had targeted 93, we also overachieved by 95%. And on ADR, we scored 100% achievement. And one of the things that we pride ourselves on in the tribunal is the simplicity of our process and the friendliness of the systems that we use, apart from the fact that our systems and our services are at no cost to the parties. Now, in this area of simplicity, we want to demonstrate that by showing that out of the 61 applications that were received in quarter three, 15 of them were filed through attorneys, and that gives us a whopping 75% of applications that were submitted by ordinary, perhaps, company directors, and people that own companies without the use of a legal expert. Again, with regard to an area of collaboration with our sister entities in the DTI family, we have initiated discussions around Schedule 4, which discussions are intended to look at expanding our mandate. When the chairperson speaks on the challenges at the end of this presentation, he'll be pointing out the fact that one of the challenges that we face is the reusing number of applications, new ones, that we receive per year. And these discussions are intended to deal with that challenge. We have identified about four areas under Schedule 4 of the Companies Act that we intend to seek the Minister's assignment in terms of more functions to us. And these fall under the areas of Close Corporations Act, Share Blocks Control Act, Consumer Protection Act, and the Cooperatives Act. So these are areas where we will be, after following discussions with our sister entities, we will then be approaching the minister to say, we think we have a role to play here. And we are quite excited about this initiative, and the discussions have been going quite well. And they will actually be continued and picked up in the seminar that we are having this Friday. You can go to the next slide, please. Thank you. The support area of administration. We had very successful webinar held with our sister entities, being the BEE Commission and the CIPC, all of it intended to market our services and to reach out to the public. We are doing well in the area of financial management, despite the underfunding that the committee would be well aware of in terms of the company's tribunal. And these are the areas that the CFO will speak to, so I will not waste the committee's time on them. Can you go to the next slide, please? Thank you. On this slide, taking advantage of the fact that we're talking numbers here, we've plotted the numbers per quarter horizontally across the page to give you a feel and the comparative analysis. The first table relates to the new against the old applications, and we give you a sense of how many applications we receive that are new per quarter. As you can see, by the end of the third quarter, we were sitting at 191 being new applications. The first column on applications brought forward is applications which for various reasons have not been finalized, and reasons for that would be that the applications would probably still be at pleading exchange stage, or they'd be in settlement or awaiting the default applications by the applicant where there's no response perhaps from the respondent. So there are various reasons why these applications are being moved from one quarter to another. This area, however, I do need to point out that it is an area of concern for the tribunal, and it is receiving attention. We do believe that we should be having less of and less of these applications that we move from month to month, and so the solutions that we are looking at the moment in terms of the amending our SOP, which has already been done, to allow us to be able to close applications that have been in the system for a long time without progress from the parties. And we are also adding extra capacity in the form of a case management officer to help us to be able to move these applications through quickly. The next table just below it, that big one, the chairperson has largely spoken to it on the basis of year to year. Here we have given it to you as a quarterly breakdown, and it is an application type table that we have that reflects that the highest number of applications we receive are around disputes, name disputes, followed by directorship, and the last one being exemptions from establishing social and ethics committees. Next slide, please. This slide gives you a sense of how we fare in terms of progressing our applications quarter to quarter. And as you can see, the pending finalization applications category is still big. And that is that area of concern that I talked about that we are making plans to deal with. The next one is of the decided cases, and there it tells you how many cases we're able to finalize per quarter. Next slide, please. The ADR is an alternative dispute resolution method. That is a more conciliatory and not adversarial mode of settling disputes that we use. Unfortunately, it is not a very popular method, but nonetheless, we believe that it should actually be higher in terms of numbers than adjudication. But we have what we have at the moment. We also do track quite a few of applications there from quarter to quarter, which, as I said, we are dealing with, and the total that we set at the end of quarter three was 27, and we have given you a per application status a breakdown as well just below. Next slide, please. So this slide gives you more detail in terms of the targets of 40, 30, and 25 days that I talked about, and I will not revisit those points again. The one I want to speak to is the output indicator under case management, which is the last one. And this one, as you can see, it is also an area of underperformance because our target is 50. But as we speak now, we are sitting at 39%, or at least as of the last quarter, we were sitting at 39. We are making progress, but we are not happy with it because we are not reaching our targets. Now, what are we doing to remedy the situation? We have established a help desk, which will, in a way, force applicants that prefer to come to us and leave thick files with us to capture, or that quite easily go onto their emails and post applications to us so that we can capture them. And when they come to the office, we will then be assisting them to be able to capture the applications themselves from our office. And as we do, we will then be teaching them how to do it. And hopefully with the next set of applications that they will be submitting, they will find it easier to do it from home or from their offices. And again, the capacity increase that I talked about in terms of the case management officer, we believe that will help as far as this application, the capturing of applications by the applicant is concerned, is going to be the person's area of focus. Next slide, please. Okay, the chairperson has already spoken to this slide in summary, which is on human resource. We can pass it to the next one, please. Thank you. We are a Pretoria-based entity at the moment. the slide is intended to show that even though we are based in Pretoria only, and we do not have the regional strength, we do make attempts to reach out to other areas. Given resources, we would of course like to have a regional spread and perhaps have sub offices in other provinces, but we're not there yet. We don't have that kind of money. So what we do is to try from where we are to reach out to other areas such as KZN, as you can see there in Richards Bay. We were there in quarter two. But because of COVID conditions, we were doing all of these engagements online. The greatest feeders into the application numbers that we receive are really attorneys and the applicants, as I have shown in the previous slides. So we do have engagements with them. Mainly to encourage them to use the case management system as opposed to submitting manually. So you will see that in quarter two and quarter three, we had a bigger focus on the attorney firms as well. Next slide, please. The slide is for noting, again, illustrating just the overachievements that we had in terms of media engagement. We are in the area of Twitter and all of these things and LinkedIn, and we are playing also in that space. We're doing radio interviews as well to reach out to the areas that we are not able to have physical presence in or even direct communication with. So we're using the media as well, and that is just an illustration of that. I do want to talk to two areas of underachievement, which are the seminar and the research. I do see that the presentation we are displaying here is not the updated one, but I'll speak to it. It has already been sent, but I think the one that is being displayed here is not the updated one. On the area of seminar, just by way of background, this is an annual program that we run. We have one big seminar per year, and we do it in collaboration with different institutions, in particular universities. In the past 3 years, we did it with UCT and we did it with UP. And this year, we reached out to two universities, being University of Johannesburg and University of the Northwest. Discussions progressed but collapsed midway. And we ended up going to UOFS, but it was a little bit late at that time, and that's why we were not able to achieve, as you can see there, our quarter three target. We achieved quarter one, we achieved quarter two, but not quarter three because of those negotiations that fell down. Another area of underperformance is on the research, which now is on the updated presentation, as I said. And that area was the responsibility of a legal advisor in our offices who was on probation, but was unfortunately not able to successfully make it through the probation period. We identified issues of underperformance and missing of targets, and we unfortunately had to terminate. That necessarily meant that we were going to run late with regard to our targets then on the research, and we have been playing catch up. We do hope that by the end of the fourth quarter, we will have achieved all the targets. But what happened is that in quarter three, which is where we managed to get a researcher to assist us, we were able to achieve quarter one and quarter two, both of them in quarter three, and in quarter four, we already achieved quarter three, and we are hoping to get approval, which you'll see us through the achievement of quarter four. I've already talked about the social media engagements that we are having, and that slide there is, you can go to the next one, please. That slide there is then for noting, and also just illustrate the areas of overachievement. We are achieving quite a lot on these areas, and so what we have done with the next year's APTs is that we've upped our targets. with regard to media engagement, because we have seen that we have been overachieving in these areas. Honorable members, I think from my side, that's where I'll leave it, and I'll hand over to our CFO to carry us through the financials. Over to you, CFO.
Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members, and colleagues. I'm Murisani Ramgadi. I'll do the presentation of the financial information for the company tribunal. So the company tribunal has spent 74% of the 2021-22 financial budget by the end of the third quarter. And the forecast has indicated that we will spend the remaining in the fourth quarter. The budget that we are talking about is an increased baseline that was after the consultations with various stakeholders, when and eventually the shareholder then increased the baseline. From 17 million, we are now at 20 million, which then grows in the over the MTEF. The increased baseline will assist the tribunal to fill some of the critical positions, only two, and also assist in providing support and maintenance for the case management system that is used by the core business. We will also put additional effort in increasing our footprint with regards to marketing and communication. This is more important because the tribunal is celebrating 10 years this year. Therefore, there is a need for more communication and marketing initiatives to increase our footprint. With the increase in the baseline, we still do not have enough funds to fill all the positions in the organic ROM as it was presented earlier. There are positions which still remain vacant and unfunded, and these are critical positions in the organization. So the next slide, I just use the picture of the budget and the spend per program. As the CEO has indicated, we have two programs, which is administration and adjudication. And the higher percentage of the budget is allocated under administration because it's a support function. And then we have 2.5 allocated to adjudication as the core business. And we've been spending gradually throughout all the three quarters. Then the next slide focuses on the expenditure per quarter. The first expenditure is the employee-related cost, which has an understanding of 2.3. The reason for that was mainly because of the vacant positions which were funded, the CFO and the legal advisor. The CFO position has now been filled, therefore that underspending will be addressed, and we are currently in the process of filling the legal advisor position. Then with the operating expenses, we've overspent them, and the reason for that was that we had to get a consultant to assist in the finance department while the process of filling the position of the CFO was still underway. However, we still have funds available to cover that in the fourth quarter. And the administrative expenses over expenditure are also mainly due to legal fees and advertising, which were done earlier. And also to the advertising and marketing was to support the seminar that the CEO also talked about earlier on. Then the audit fees, the understanding was, the overspending was as a result of the timing of the audit, which then led off at the end of the fourth quarter. And the cost of the tribunal members fees is determined by, is derived by the cases received and the numbers it takes to resolve them. So in the next slide, is the overall expenditure, the financial performance, overall expenditure to date compared to the budget available, and it just shows that overall we still have, we have overspent 1% taking into account all the expenditure in aggregate, and also the reasons I provided earlier with regards to where we've underspent and where we've overspent. Then I'll go to financial management summary. In aggregate, we've spent, I've indicated we've spent 74% of our budget, and that was, there was 24% of that was spent in the first quarter, 50% in the second quarter. And these are cumulative numbers. The spending pattern will be hampered by the communication that we received from National Treasury on the 25th of February and the 3rd of March regarding the invalidity of procurement regulations. However, we are in communication to find ways on how we can continue executing activities that have financial impact without attracting any, without ending with any non-compliances. We have not incurred any irregular expenditure, irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure for all of the three quarters. And we've also continued paying our suppliers within the prescribed 30 days, and most of them were paid within 15 days. I'll hand over to the chairperson to then talk to the challenges. Thank you.
Thank you, CEO and CFO. Some of the challenges, and I think if you look at the challenges, some of them are also opportunities, I suppose. The one challenge is always the funding and budgetary constraints. And I think that that plays itself out with the fact that we can't fill certain key positions. And I think that's a major challenge. The number of cases, I think there's a major decline. I think the case numbers have been consistent. And also I think it relates to our mandate. Our jurisdiction is limited with regard to the type of cases we can adjudicate. So I think if there's an increase in, if there's an amendment to the Act or to increase our jurisdiction, many more people will be able to use the tribunal. And I think that's an opportunity one should look at, because the idea is to provide access to justice, which is free access to justice for people who own companies. And I think it's important that we use that opportunity increase, because we have a number of members. The members that we have come from different parts of the profession. There's attorneys, there's advocates, there's acting judges, there's academics, and I think they're being underutilized in the services that they provide for the country. So I think there's a major need for increasing the mandate so the tribunal is being utilized a bit more. And I think that's number three as well. Facilities, I think obviously because of the budget, the facilities and external dependencies, we depend on DTI for our facilities, and they've been providing us with facilities. Obviously, we don't always have the required venues for, we often use boardrooms, et cetera, for our cases, but at the moment we are dependent on DTI to provide us with our office space and our facilities. And I think that's something, if we grow, that's something we need to look at, because it's not always ideal in dealing with the types of cases that we're dealing with. At the moment, most of our cases are online, but I think once we get back to more face-to-face conflict resolution processes, the facilities issue may become an issue. So the challenges are there, and as I said, the challenges are opportunities. I think the tribunal is hungry to do more work, to provide access to everyone, the poorest of our country, to have a dispute resolution mechanism that would assist them in resolving disputes. So I think I think it's important that we use the tribunal a bit more, that its mandate be increased so that the members that it has that do those adjudication and mediation processes touch on the lives of all South Africans. That's the hope we have as the tribunal. Thank you, honourable members, and we await your questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much to the company's tribunal. So we'll have hands now for interactions on both presentations, CIPC and CT. May I see your hands, members? We have the one question that's already been posed, issue raised by Honourable Cuthbert. Members, there are no questions. That means the presentations were clear. I saw a hand that disappeared. Oh, Honourable Malamecha.
No, thank you, Chairperson. Honourable members, Commissioner and the team. Let me take this opportunity to welcome the presentation. Very comprehensive and promising. Much appreciated. It is just two clarity seeking questions. And these are influenced by the reality on the ground. You will understand that as much as you are doing a very good job, there will be those who want to take some chances. And the consequences of that will be observed or realized on the ground, and it becomes a very serious matter if we have a cause to advance and people are taking advantage of it and misdirect it. Then mine will be, how is the CIPC assisting the BBEE Commission to deal with the challenges of fronting, which is equivalent to frauds? Then the second one, you will note that prevention is better than cure. What is it that the Commission is doing to extend its education and awareness campaign to the people in underdeveloped and rural areas? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Burns Mamashe.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson. And my question would be directed to the Companies Tribunal first. And Chair, I hasten to really indicate and or disclose that this entity, I only learned of its existence when I joined this portfolio committee. Now I am wondering, with all the exposure that I have, how many of our people, especially in rural areas, who may not be aware of such an important institution, which is really meant to assist them. And not only that, but also those who are at their formative and or budding stage in terms of business ventures, who probably some of them may have challenges as they may have met with unscrupulous business operators. So I thought, let me preface by making that, in which case that seeks to say there's a lot of awareness programs that need to be done practically in areas that are accessible to our people. Because sometimes there could be awareness programs, but those awareness programs, if they are held in areas that are inaccessible, they are as good as not being there. If the means that are being used are kind of sophisticated for an ordinary person, still they don't serve the purpose. So it would mean, I would be interested to understand as to a plan that the tribunal would have to really address those issues, so that a person at Kamtobowa in the rural hinterland of Middle Drift in the Eastern Cape should know, a person who is Kwamhluhlwa in Mpumalanga should know, a person who is at Gaphahla in Limpopo should know. Now, because that's how that's the measure with which we are able to ascertain the extent to which that these services are accessible to our people. Be that as it may, Chair, I note that the organogram of the tribunal shows that there are a number of strategic positions that have not been filled as at 31st December 2021. You know, such as the operations manager, corporate service manager, and so on. You know, legal advisor, you know, etc. These are strategic positions which are not being filled. And of course, I do note that some of these are unfunded. But the question then would be, what remedial action is being taken to correct this kind of situation? Because for the effectiveness and efficiency of this important institution, you need at least adequate personnel. And secondly, we have also noted that on the website of the tribunal, it puts it very clear that there are no vacancies being advertised at the moment. Where on one hand you have these vacancies that they are talking to. So the question would then be, how does the tribunal expect to attract people for these positions when it does not advertise on its website? And the second question, Chair, the tribunal is still seems to still be dependent on external auditors. I suppose this would talk to internal capacity inadequacy, and the question would be, what is the tribunal doing to build its own capacity and minimize external dependencies? Lastly, Chair, this one would be directed to the CPIC. Yes, we appreciate the innovations as they would talk to self-service walk-in centers that are currently in two provinces. In three cities, which would be your Cape Town, Johannesburg, and Pretoria. Then the question would be, does the CIPC have plans to have the self-service walk-in centers in other provinces? This I'm raising because South Africa is not only limited to the metropolitan areas, you know, of Cape Town, Johannesburg, Pretoria, Durban. You've got rural provinces, which are quite significant in South Africa. And it's important to have a footprint of services of this nature easily and readily accessible to where the people are. You know, because the other important element about this is because if we encourage people to register businesses, not only register businesses, but also expose them to programs of financial literacy, business management skills, that will also address some of the historical challenges of unemployment, inequality, you know, as well as poverty, because you have a number, for instance, of young graduates who are unemployed. And you'll find that a significant number of them, they don't really want to be employed. They want to be entrepreneurs in various fields, commodities, and so on. And by so doing, they are able to create jobs for others. So if this information is readily accessible to where they are at the doorstep, it makes it much more easy. So what I'm really interested in is the extent to which CPIC would have such a footprint which will make it easy for all those who are aspirant business entrepreneurs to get the information and be equipped with whatever that will assist them in whatever venture that they want to pursue. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Burns Mamashe, Honorable Yaku.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. I think I just have one question. In regards to the Competitions Tribunal, they listed five challenges that they have in respect of the budget, which I won't touch into. Can they diagnose for me why they think that the number of cases are declining? And secondly, when they talk about mandate challenges, what are those? I need to specifically know. And then in terms of facilities, is it that they don't have space or that other departments are not assisting them to do their job at the optimum? Otherwise, that's all. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Motau.
Thanks, Chair, for the opportunity. Only two questions. One under CIPRO. In terms of the corporate compliance and enforcement dealing with irregularities, seems to be a challenge for the Commission with 97% in quota 1, 88% in quota 2, and 97% in quota 3. Why is this the case and what has been done to correct this? Secondly, Chair, what are some of the sanctions imposed for companies that are found to have contravened the Act? And how many such companies have been found to have contravened the Act? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Moase.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me also join Honorable Malemet by welcoming the presentation. I've got two questions, Chairperson. Chairperson, as we note the rapid increase in the registration of companies, we want to know what is the percentage of companies that face the deregistration yearly. I'm asking this question, Chairperson, because the Competition Commission report on economic concentration indicates that there is a 40% of exodus of small companies in the economy within the first year of the establishment. On the program one, volumes at service centers, why are we only provided with statistics for this? Big for the three, very much, Chairperson.
We lost you a bit today. After you said big, what was the word after that? Honorable Moatse?
Okay, on the last question.
Yes.
Chairperson. I said on the program one, volumes at service centers, why are we only provided with the statistic for the three big metros and not for other provinces?
Okay. Yeah. Okay, thank you. Honorable Mbuyani.
Chairperson, thank you for the opportunity and let's welcome the presentation, Chair. It's very comprehensive and informative, Chairperson. However, Chair, I have some few clarity-seeking questions. Many of the startup business are complaining, notwithstanding the fact that their business are dormant, but SARS still demand returns when companies said to be dormant for 5 years and not even have their CSDs. What is the advice from the CIPC on this regard? Chairperson, according to the quarter report, while the number of calls received by the call center are determined, the numbers of calls answered could not be determined. Can the CIPC also clarify on this one? What is the case? Also, the acquisition of such tools and the tender process, Chair, can the CIPC explain the cause of the delays and provide the current status quo in terms of the process of the tender process? I will pause there for now, Chairperson. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you very much. Can I hand first to Advocate Voller and then to Dr. Chite.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and other members for those questions. I'll start off with the Honorable Cuthbert. You asked the first question. What we have worked with over the last while together with the World Bank is to understand, number one, the methodology that they were using in order to assess countries based on where they're going to rank them. The one thing that came out clearly from our interactions with them was that South Africa had a multitude of processes that they had to be lumped together in a single point for them to determine that a company had truly started. Now, I'll tell you what some of them are. You have to register a company, you have to register for tax, you have to register for the Department of Labor processes, you have to go through all of these particular aspects in order for you to, for them to determine that you have concluded the process of registration of a company. So we asked them, we're registering companies within less than a day. Is that a world standard? Yes, it is. SARS gives you a tax registration number together with the registration because we link together. Is that acceptable? Yes, it is. Department of Labor, UIF, have these multitude of processes that they need to do verification and due diligence. It takes a bit of days and time. Is that acceptable? They would say that's where the problem also lies. So what we did was, one of the reasons that this portal came about was not only because we wanted to have a one-stop shop in order for the ease of doing business to improve, but also to take into account the fact that the World Bank required us to have an integrated service and an integrated portal in order for us or our ranking to improve. When this portal came out, you need a full solid year in order for them to assess you and for them to determine if your ranking will change. What we got from them was that it's certainly going to make a huge difference, and the ranking system will certainly improve. But after that, as you all know, and if you've seen the World Bank media statements that have gone out, they decided to fold the Doing Business report because there was elements of corruption and manipulation of the system and manipulation of the methodology, which, by the way, on a personal level, Jay, I always used to say that. There was something not quite right with that particular ranking. So what they've now come up with, and it's conceptualized and it's in draft form, and we are feeding into it because they asked for our views. They're coming up with a new methodology called Business Enabling Environment with certain new indicators. It's in draft form. Many countries are inputting into that, and South Africa, as I said, is one of them. We are sure going to, as part of our responses, inform them of the differences that the previous methodology failed to look at and failed to understand, and therefore we believe that it was not taken into account and apples were not being compared to apples. For example, I always get asked this question, Madam Chair and members, but how come Rwanda is ahead of you, for example, in South Africa? I could never understand it myself. Number one, Rwanda is a major small country. The number of registrations Rwanda does on an annual basis, we probably do in a space of a week. We have a large land mass and we have a large population. How do you compare apples with apples when our registration periods were exactly the same as theirs? So we're working with the World Bank to understand the new methodology, and I firmly believe that it will take into account all the integrated services that we have, and I'm hoping to see an improvement in terms of the new business in rail environment and what they're going to come up with as far as how South Africa will be ranked according to that. Hope to answer the question. The next question was by the Honorable Malimaja. The question was on BEE and affronting. And the word that he used was his fraud. I could not agree more. 100% hit the nail on the head. It is fraud. It is a scourge. And we work quite closely with the BEE Commission, Commissioner in Tuli, in order for us to provide them with assistance. We provide them with documentation. We provide them with some investigation capacity. And we also discuss how we're going to uniformly deal with this issue of fronting. But the Honorable Member must understand, yes, and I agree that we are one government user, but there is a mandate for the BEE to do it. We can assist. And we certainly have been assisting, and we will continue to provide our services to them in any way that they request us to. We've got, I think, a bit more investigating capacity. We have had complaints against fronting that were given to us, and we work jointly with them in order for us to deal with them, to prosecute them properly, and to try and eradicate the scourge that we currently are faced with regarding that. The other question that he faced was the issue about external education and awareness. What else do we do? Rural areas and stuff like that. I'll give you a small example. My team, I think it was Monday, they were in Lusigisigi. They they all over the place. They really do. There's a couple of things that we do. We partner with our provincial partners in order for us to give workshops and education activity. As I said, we've got lots of partners. We partner with CEDA. They've also got a great program of outreach, and we form part of that cluster in educating throughout the length and breadth of South Africa. And we also partner with the Deputy Minister's program. Deputy Minister Kina has a big program, and we go all over with them. The majority of the time, these are not in major areas. It's always, not all, but the majority in smaller towns and throughout South Africa that we attend to. So it's a core function that we do. I think I tried especially in my presentation that education and awareness is something that we're pushing hard. We must ensure that it is a core mandate of ours, and therefore we continue to do a lot of work in that particular area. Honorable Burns and Amashe asked a question about the SSCs, the South Service Centers. Why do we only put three as far as this is concerned? There's a couple of things and a couple of ways that I can answer that. Number one is that if you saw one of the slides that I put up, is that actually we're in every single province. It's just the model that we use is different. We came up with our own self-service centers in the beginning, and then we realized, wait, hang on, it takes us a bit of time for us to set these service centers up and to man them from afar, etc. It becomes a little bit complex. Why do we not mental agencies and the like in order for us to supply them with the knowledge, for us to supply them with the capability, for us to supply them with the automation, and therefore they can do the work on our behalf? And that's exactly what we've done. You will find us in everywhere. You find us in Richards Bay, you find us in Kimberley, you find us in Bloemfontein, you find us in White River, you find us in Nelspruit, Polokwane, you name it, Saldanha Bay, you name it, you will find us in a lot of places, simply because of the partnerships and the collaboration model that we built up over the period of time for us to have this major outreach. Also, we do empowerment for entrepreneurs, together, another question that he asked, we do have empowerment initiatives together with CEDA, and we have the SME Drive and the SME program in the IP space. Localization of entrepreneurship and inventions is a huge program for us. It's part of our strategy. It even speaks to some of the joint indicators that the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition have, because it's part of our industrialization process. So we're working a lot as far as that is concerned. We're making sure that we take the message of corporateship and entrepreneurship to everybody, and therefore we have programs that are dedicated to that particular area. Now, Arden asked a question about corporate compliance and the percentages. To say, one, we do a lot of work as far as enforcement is concerned. We do a lot of work as far as financial transparency and the improvement of the corporate governance landscape is concerned. We've taken many companies to court, and we've taken many compliance notices against companies. But I agree, we can do more. So as part of our organizational redesign process, our big focus is on our regulatory capacity and our regulatory capability. And we're going to look at beefing that up, putting more warm bodies, but not only more warm bodies, looking at how do we bring a lot of expertise in that area so that we make an even more impact in the work that we do. You've seen from some of the high profile cases, we are trying to make an impact. It becomes quite difficult. There's a lot of issues that surrounding many of the large ones, but we go in guns blazing because we want to see the change, and we want to make sure that we make a difference when it comes to the change. So we place a lot of emphasis on our investigating role and also our investigating reputation so that people take us seriously when we go in. We do boardroom visits, for example. We go in there, we listen to what directors are saying in the Johannesburg Security Exchange. We give them some advice, we take notes, they're not filling in the responsibilities, we let them know. It's all part of how we continue to try and make a difference in that particular area. She also asked a question about what is the powers that we have when we find wrongdoing. There's a couple of things that we've done. We, for example, in the last couple of months, we had a huge case and we got an admin fine of R1 million, okay, with a very, very large company that's formed part of our regulatory role. We on a daily basis, I sign off with probably 10 or 15 compliance notices to companies, part of our investigation reports, and we can make those available. We have so many of them. We also have issues around applying to court to have directors declared delinquent, and we got a couple of them. We call them delinquency applications, and we even have a register, which we call the DDR, which is the Delinquency Directors Register, where we stop directors from being part of companies because of their conduct. We have quite a bit in our arsenal that we use in order for us to ensure that those who do wrong things are held accountable accordingly. Honourable Mwatu asked the question about the percentage of deregistration. The percentage of deregistration is very high. I think in our next cycle, we're probably going to deregister between 300,000 to 400,000 new companies. But we don't take it lightly. We don't do it on a speedily basis, because the Companies Act says that only when they do not lodge annual returns for 2 years or more do you go out and take action against them. But we inform the companies. We send them notices. We tell them this is coming. We give them a lot of time. And then we get to the point where we realize there's a lot of dormancy, a lot of companies that are not functioning, and therefore one of our functions is to clean up the register. We go and we effect deregistration. Yes, a lot of small companies fail. We have a very large registration culture in South Africa without proper planning being done. I always say this when I speak about registration, is that before you rush to get limited liability and before you want to come into the regulator space of being a company, have a proper business plan. Start off being a sole proprietor. Once you start growing and you need financial backing, you need to go to a bank and you need to have the protection of limited liability, come into the space of being regulated and come into company registration. But have a plan first. A lot of entrepreneurs rushed for registration when they actually give them nothing. Okay, it just gives you limited liability, but you have no plan. So it has to go hand in hand with our development institutions, with our seniors of this world, with our sisters of this world, to provide financial backing and assistance, and therefore it needs to have a coordinated and integrated service that will be provided to entrepreneurs in a particular space. Why did I only put the numbers for the three big metros? It's because those are the ones that we control. I think it speaks directly to the question asked by Honorable Bernard Namashe, that our partners control their centers. Invest SA, for example, controls their centers, but we provide a part of the service in those percentages. They keep the statistics. So what I've done in the last couple of months, I have said to my team in the CIPC and in my IT, we need to also get the statistics of those particular provincial partners, what is flowing through those particular centers. So we are definitely working on getting those numbers out and getting them into a report. And the last question for me is from the Honorable Buyane. He asked a couple of questions. One was that the SARS demands the tax returns. I think there is a difference between the two, right? The difference between a tax return and an annual return. And in SARS asks for the tax returns which are linked to the registration of a company, because our database and the SARS database are linked. We see the information. It's been like this for a multitude of years. So what we can do is that if a company requires of us to prove to SARS that they are not trading and they are dormant, they simply write to us. We get many companies that do this. They write to us to say, CIPC, I am dormant. I am not trading. I will send you a financial accountability supplement which proves that I am not trading, but I do not want to be deregistered because I am still trying to sort out business, etc. We can provide that particular information to them that they can provide to SARS. Alternatively, I should have a discussion with the Commissioner of SARS to say they can tap into the financial accountability supplement database and they can throw the information themselves. I think it's required. In the last couple of weeks, probably about a month or so, we have decided to reconstitute meetings between CIPC and SARS, and therefore we can talk about these at that particular level and to assist entrepreneurs out there. Regarding the issue of our call center, it's a very big problem, and it's a problem that has been a pain in CIPC side and mine for a very long time. But we're trying to tackle it, and I'll tell you why. The CIPC call center is linked to the Department of Trade and Industry network as far as call center system is concerned. Now, with COVID, we could not close down our call center. We had to move our staff off-site in terms of working from home, but they still had to answer calls. The system that was used was a web-based system, which is not ideal because it doesn't log all the calls. What we've done in the last month, we have just appointed a new service provider. They used to be Nestware before. They call, I think, ADX or ATX now, to provide us with a cloud-based call center technology solution, which we are currently working on. It will give us more functionality. It will give us soft phone capability. It will give us more statistics which come out of the system. And we will be able to add more call center agents to that particular system. So we do understand the problem on the Bumbuyani, and we're definitely tackling that particular problem. It certainly is not ideal. We have a problem with our call center, and we're trying to tackle that particular area. The last one was about the tenders, and I think my CFO can answer the issue about the tender process and what has been happening in that particular space. Mr. Jasset?
I'm assuming to the tender around the search tool, which we mentioned in the presentation. With regards to that, what the issue was or the delay was that CIPC had a set of requirements, and it was unsure. We were unsure whether the market would be able to provide the requirements which CIPC wished to have. So the unit together with SCM had to sit and develop a first go out on a request for information to the market, and also to try to get companies from overseas to respond to this request for information to assess if the internationally there was such requirements of CIPC available. So it was a multi-stage tender process. We eventually got the responses of the request for information, and we subsequently then drafted our TOR based on the responses received on the request for information and sent out, and subsequently advertised a tender. We're currently in the process of evaluation of the particular tender. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Chikte.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think there were two sets of questions that were asked to the Companies Tribunal. The one was from Honorable Burns. The question was about whether the Companies Tribunal is well known, and I think he brought up an excellent point. He said he only knew about the tribunal by being within this particular committee itself. And I think that's important, and that's something that the tribunal takes quite seriously. The idea for the tribunal is to get us well known, and we've been doing that. If you look at our budget, quite a bit of it is spent on marketing the tribunal itself, and we use different platforms to market, the internet, social media, the gatekeepers for adjudication, the attorneys, and then we also go to the communities with some of the DTI programs as well. So there's different media facilities, radio, television, and that's one way of getting access so that people can know us. But I think that the reason why some people may know us and some may not is also because we spoke about a limited mandate. You know, you've got to, the Companies Act gives us a mandate to hear certain decisions, and it's for adjudication we restricted to a certain. The more popular ones are name disputes, extension of AGMs, the Social and Ethics Committee, and directorship disputes where there's a limited number of directors. So we can't show all cases in terms of the Companies Act. And I think that that's the limited restricted mandate. And also when it comes to arbitration, if you look at the interpretation of the Act, as it stands, you need consent of both parties when it comes to arbitration. And that's a problem because if one of the parties may not want to arbitrate, especially the respondent, and an applicant who can't afford to go to court is left with no access to justice. So the Act needs to be amended in a sense to allow for default arbitrations, and also the jurisdiction of the type of disputes we can hear need to be increased as well. And I think the conference we're having on Friday is to look at ways in which we can deal with other entities such as small business, such as cooperatives, share blocks, closed corporations, etc. So if we increase our mandate then I think we'll be able to touch the lives of a lot of South Africans. And I also think another thing is that if you look at the poorer areas, I'm not sure what the numbers are of people forming companies. Maybe some of the small businesses, maybe private-owned individuals or partnerships rather than companies. So the idea is also to encourage people to form companies and to know the pros and cons of having a company. I mean, the pros could be having a type of bigger personality, but the disadvantage could be tax implication. But I think there needs to be greater awareness and greater, more education in those areas for the benefits of forming companies. And I know Honorable Burns spoke about what programs one must put in place. And maybe one idea is to work together with CIPC and to create more education for people to form companies within those areas so that they get the benefits of having a company and then can have access to using the tribunal. Because if they're a private individual with a small business, they can't use the company's tribunal. Whereas if they're a company and they have increased mandate, and then we could touch the lives of most South Africans. And I think that's an opportunity that needs to be filled in by creating education and also by increasing the mandate. And the second part of his question was the number of positions that have not been filled. And I think that's right, operations manager, corporate service manager, etc. And it's obviously, it comes down to due to finances. It's difficult for us to fill in those positions. It is going to take majority of our budget. I believe less the actual main task, which is to deal with dispute resolution and adjudicate cases. So the difficulty lies with the funding of those particular positions itself. What are we doing to get funding? I mean, we've looked at various options. Charging a fee is not going to give us enough funds to actually fund all those positions. So we've been working with DTI to look at opportunities, either get more funding. Ideally, it would be the best would be to be self-funded. And one idea was to have a certain percentage of company registrations coming to the tribunal, increasing the mandate. And in that way, it becomes a bit more self-sufficient. And it achieves what it's designed to achieve. So I think there are opportunities there that need to be dealt with effectively through legislative changes that are necessary. And we're also working together with the Special Committee on Company Law. Our tribunal has a part of those membership meetings, which advises the minister on amendments to the Companies Act. With regard to vacancies, the tribunal website did indicate the vacancy for the CFO, and the one for the legal officer will also be on there and then also be advertised on other platforms. Question about external auditors. I think it's important for us to understand that we need to have external audits, our books to be audited by external auditors. It also, there's a neutral third party checking on our finances. And I think for us, we pride in the fact that we continue to want to get clean audits, and having a neutral third party check on our finances, I think is important for us to ensure that we're efficient and the state's finances are used efficiently. And then the question by Honorable Yako, a few of the questions. One with regard to facilities. We want to thank DTI for providing us with the facilities, but they're not always ideal due to lack of resources. There's two rooms, for example, two boardrooms, which we're fortunate enough to have, but they don't always have air conditioning or windows, and it becomes a challenge, especially during the time where we have the coronavirus. So sometimes we often use online more now, especially because of corona. So those facilities are not ideal, especially if you're going to increase our mandate. Two boardrooms, you're going to have lots of cases, not going to be enough. And if they don't have air conditioning or windows, or don't always accommodate the number of people that need to be in the room, then it becomes a problem. But we are grateful for the office space and the facilities. Without that, our budget would be stretched even further. I think I spoke about the mandate that was asked. I think, as I said, we have limited jurisdiction in terms of the companies that we can't hear every single dispute between companies, and also the fact that we can't hear at the moment yet default arbitrations, is a problem, especially for ADRs, you need consent of both parties. And I think that's something that, if you look at the way in which arbitrations are developed in institutions that work, like the CCMA, for example, everyone knows of the CCMA. You know, every employee can say, I'll take you to the CCMA. And I think that's where, in a sense, the tribunal should be, that every person in a company can know they can have access to free justice. And an arbitration is one way of dealing with that. If you could have default arbitrations, if only the applicant could choose to refer to arbitration without the need for consent from the respondent, I think more people would use the tribunal, because a person who's being sued is not going to consent to go to arbitration. They'd rather let the matter go to litigation, because they know the person suing may not be able to afford it, and it may take a few years before justice is achieved. So I think there's lots of opportunities there for the law to be amended in order to provide for us to have a greater mandate and to touch people's lives a bit more than, well, much more than we actually do at the moment. So I think it's an opportunity that's there for an amendment to the legislation, and for us to be a bit more creative in accessing finances to ensure that, so the tribunal's been trying to do that. I mean, we've had seminars over the last few years. We've partnered with universities to save costs and also to touch on the minds of those academics and practitioners and our clients in trying to ensure we provide a better service. And so the conference we're having on Friday is a very important one. It talks about increasing our mandate, not only to companies, but to other types of entities. So we're looking for ways to have a greater impact. I'm not sure anyone in my team wants to say anything from the CFO side or from the CEO side.
CMCT? Any addition?
If the CFO wants to add something on the external auditors, thank you, members.
Thank you.
Thank you. The chairperson had already covered it, but it's just to say that the external auditors is a function that cannot be done internally because of the statutory requirement. Section 55 of the PFME Act requires the accounting officer of the organization to submit their financial statements to be audited. And for public entity, it's prescribed, but it must be done by Auditor General unless the Auditor General is given an approval to be audited by other auditors. So it's a function that cannot be done internally. It must be outsourced to certain bodies to execute it, because it provides oversight to the governance and activities of the organization. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That concludes the responses. I see there's a follow-up pen from Honorable Mbuyani.
Honorable Mbuyani. Yes, thank you very much, Chairperson. I just wanted to check with the DPIC, because earlier on the strategic plan was saying they have joined KPIs and UAs in dealing with matters. Hence, those questions were asked as to what is it that they're doing in terms of the triple BEE fronting, what is it that they're doing with the commission, the competition commission, in terms of the economic concentration. Because really, if the economy is concentrated, some small businesses that is re-registering in the process. So the DGI does have a strategy to link between all these KPIs to see to it that even if the triple B cannot be able to deal with the funding, but the NEF can be able to identify those companies that need assistance, and the IDC as well, moving forward. Chairperson, thank you.
Thank you very much. Advocate Voller. Oh, I see there's another hand from Honorable Burns Namashe. I just want to ask, if we go beyond 12 o'clock, I'm going to please request that we hand over to Honorable Mbuyane to chair the rest of the session, because I have to be physically at Parliament at half past 12 for a meeting. Honorable Burns Ngomashe.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. It's just a follow-up on the issue that talks to external audit. I think let me just give a context so that when they respond in accordance with the context. The issue here is about whether there is sufficient and or adequate functional internal audit capacity, so that if they don't have that, the question then would be, is there a plan in place to improve that area? Because in most cases, agencies, whether it's departments or state institutions, there's a tendency of outsourcing. Sometimes outsourcing even when there are warm bodies internally. But the challenge is that the warm bodies, they seem not to have the requisite capacity to deal with those strategic functions. So it is in that context that we are asking this question, not necessarily perhaps understating the necessity of the statutory requirement in terms of the PFMA. We're aware of that, that all listed entities, they can't audit themselves. They've got to be audited by an external body. But in this case, we want to assess the internal capacity, so that when they come before this committee again, they must not tell us that we are unable to do A, B, C, D, or we decided to outsource this because of inadequate internal capacity. So that's the context of the question. Thank you very much.
Advocate Waller.
Yes, ma'am. Okay, based on that, we do have internal audit capacity. I've got a full-fledged internal audit department with a lot of expertise. I even had an IT auditor containing there, and unfortunately he left. I'm getting a new one now, and I've got in the last three months, I've employed three more internal auditors. So we have a fully-fledged internal audit department. We use them quite a lot to ensure that our governance is correct. When we do multiple changes in the organization, before we actually even sign them off, we do internal audit reporting on them, and they feed indirectly into the risk committee and into the audit committee of the CIPC. So we've got a lot of capacity as far as that is concerned. What we do is that when we have larger internal audit requests, for example, from the audit committee, which we do have from time to time on an ad hoc basis, we do have a co-sourcing arrangement if we need some specialist assistance. So our internal audits will be assisted by an external party. But those are, in the last couple of years, that has become quite rare, and we've reduced the use of any form of co-sourcing partners in our internal audit department. So the answer, short answer is we have full internal audit capacity.
Thank you. I don't see any further hands, and I want to take this opportunity to thank the CIPC team and the Companies Tribunal team
for their presentations here and for the robust engagement. Thank you very much. I think we can excuse you from the platform and go to the next agenda item. I think it's closing remarks, Mr. Herman.
That's correct, Chair.
Okay. For closing remarks, can you just indicate for us our next meeting?
Sure, Chair. Then our next meeting will be next Tuesday, the 22nd of March, and we will get a briefing by the DTIC and its entities on the economic reconstruction and recovery plan. And then we'll also consider the first draft report on the public protectors report, Chair.
Thank you very much. With that, I thank you all for your presence here in this meeting this morning and wish you a pleasant day further. Thank you very much. The meeting is closed.
Long live the Chair. Long live the Chair. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
I don't hear Yako saying thank you, Chair.
No, man, leave Yaku. We didn't see a beautiful face today. Thank you very much, everyone.